Blog Talk Radio.
I'm the greatest thing that ever lived, and I don't have a mark on my face. And I upset Sonny Liston, and I just turned 22 years old. I must be the greatest. I told the world, I talk to God every day. If God's with me, can't no battle be against me, Sonny. I'm shook up the world. I know the real God.
Cassius, wait a minute, Cassius.
I am the king of the world.
Hold it.
I'm pretty.
Hold it, you're not that pretty.
I'm a bad man.
That's the sound of the police. That's the sound of the beast. That's the sound of the police. That's the sound of the beast.
All right, welcome to RSG, a boxing moment with Darnell and Devon. And we got a lot of good stuff to talk about on this short podcast today. One of our podcasts on our RSG platform. Please go to realsportsguys.com if you want to catch everything else. You can catch One Mic. You can look back at our some of the shows we've done in the past, The Big Show. We got Hustle and Flows. You'll see those things pop up. You can find us on all the platforms in terms of from YouTube to Facebook to whatever you want to find us on, as well as the podcast platforms that you can find us on if you want to listen or look. But you can start with realsportsguys.com as a place where you can get it. The Boxing Moment, this is a podcast where if you listen to us for a long time, you know, boxing has always kind of been this, thread that we've always gone back and forth to. We've been fortunate enough to have folks like our brother and contributor, Teron Briggs, come on, formerly with Boxing.com, freelance writer, many different platforms around boxing, as well as the editor of Ring Magazine, the Bible of Boxing, Dougie Fisher. So, you know, we are always in that, and we got some fights coming on, and we got some fights to reflect on today. And, you know, we have we can't get started without our resident boxing expert and birthday boy. Happy birthday to you, to our man Darnell Kirkland. What's up, man? How you doing, brother?
Yep, as our listeners know, today is my birthday, and today is the day that I get to watch the return of one of my favorite people in boxing and one of my favorite boxers, Gary Russell Jr. He's going to be fighting today. And also we're going to see a lot of hard hitting today because we have Deontay Wilder, which is widely known as probably the hardest puncher in boxing today. And somebody that is also in that conversation is Noye the Monster Inouye. He fights today on the undercard of the World Boxing Super Series. He is fighting in the World Boxing Super Series as well. But I believe Josh Taylor and Ivan the Beast Bratichek will be the main event for the evening. And we also have the return of Billy Joe Saunders after a suspension from a performance-enhancing drug issue. As most people remember, he was slated to fight Demetrius Andrade for his belt. He was supposed to fight Demetrius Andrade last year, and he tested positive for a weight loss supplement, something like that. And since he was suspended, since he's not able to take the supplement anymore, he actually moved up, so he's fighting at 168 right now. So there's a lot of boxing going on today, a lot of things for us to talk about, and it's going to be a fun one. I'm ready to talk boxing, but.
Yeah, see, we talk about his birthday. He probably, went out and balled a little bit today on his birthday. He got his fights going. I know the food going to be ready. So you can see our man is ready to go. He's going to go. He's getting on it. You know, if you listen to our previous podcast, we talked a little bit about fight that just happened that was had a real big build-up in the middleweight division. We had Julian J-Rock Williams against Jared Swift Hurd. It was Jared Hurd's opportunity to fight in his own backyard in the DMZ in terms of being able to do something for the home crowd. And for those of you who may not know, he got upset and beat. I don't know if you call it upset because J-Rock is a top middleweight fighter and I think was prepared to bring the noise. But Jared Hurd had been really walking through folks. I had that fight scored 117-110 for J-Rock. I mean, he pretty much controlled the distance, the energy. Jared Hurd did not really make any adjustments. It looked like he was like he was having an out-of-body experience in there in my mind. But you watched the fight. What were your thought about it? I mean, what does this mean for J-Rock as well moving forward?
J-Rock, he put on a performance that will really change the mind of a lot of fans and the boxing media and the way that they treat fighters that have losses on their resume, that may have stepped up in competition. And people kind of throw them away because they're like, oh, they lost to such and such, but maybe they're not as good as the rest of the fighters. But he came back. He got a couple fights in. He fought some other fighters that he reworked his way back up. And he fought Jared Swift Hurd. And he took the fight to him from the very beginning of the fight. Because if you look at Jared Hurd and his style, he likes to push people around the ring. He's very big for the division, for 154. He walks around in the 190s and cuts about 40 pounds every camp to get down, just to get down. So he's a naturally big guy. So he, like, uses his weight and leans on people. But what J-Rock did from round one, he was in his chest, and he didn't allow him to move his momentum forward. So he was stopping his momentum, and he was fighting on the inside. And one thing that J-Rock said after the fight, he said, I'm from Philly. I'm from the city of Joe Frazier. I'm from the city of Matthew Saad Muhammad. I'm from the city of all these guys. And he put on a performance that was very reminiscent of one of his favorite fighters, one of his idols, of Bernard Hopkins. You see him throw up an X all the time before he goes into the ring. And he looked very reminiscent of Bernard Hopkins with his inside game, his IQ, and the way he was just making adjustments and the way he followed the game plan to perfection. And that's the one thing he brought with the corner of J-Rock. Not J-Rock, the corner of Jared Hurd is he didn't make too many adjustments. I think he...
No.
It might be too soon to say he needs a new trainer, but it looked like they didn't have anything for him. They didn't have a plan B. Like, he's a strong plan A fighter, and we've seen him fight in the past where the plan A was not working, and he was just persistent and keep going, keep moving forward, and eventually wear down fighters and break them down so we can stop them in the end. But it didn't happen this time because, really, he didn't have the juice at the end to do it because J-Rock hurt him early. And when you get hurt, that drains all your energy because you have to fight to survive. So that's a lot of things. That's really what I took away from the fight. And I always had respect for J-Rock, but it really gave me a little more respect, like a heightened sense of respect for J-Rock and his team.
Yeah, you know, I think, I mean, that's an incredible analysis that you did there. I mean, and really trying to, I think one what surprised me, I think surprised so many of us, but he gave you a clue to this if you listen to the pre-fight stuff in terms of some adjustments he made in his camp, was his willingness to really be up in his chest, like you said, Bernard Hopkins style, and not only be there, but be the stronger person in there. Like, no one expected him to be the bully in the ring. Even if he was going to go in there, you thought there was going to be some pushing back and forth, but he pretty much made Hurd, he did the Hurd with Hurd usually does to other folks. He made him go where he wanted him to go. And I think sometimes it's like when you face the bully on the block like that, and they don't have any answers, you know, they just they go down just flailing, and it starts to pile on you. And like you said, you're right. I mean, no adjustments in the corner, you know, not using the jab. You know, he's got a great jab, not really using the jab as a way to deter. None of that was happening. J-Rock was always making adjustments, but he was not going to – if he delivered a hard blow, he's going to make him pay with two or three. That was incredible. And he was doing a side – so great handspring. And part of that was, you remember, he got, you know, and also, I mean, people don't understand, and I think you pointed this out about, you know, folks talking about people coming back. You know, when you come up in a boxing game, you know, and you sometimes see this a lot more in MMA, the infrastructure around you isn't as developed until you make some kind of money. And so some of the differences sometimes in fighters is their ability to have nutrition, to have personal trainers who work on strength and conditioning. When we talk about Deontay Wilder, I mean, he put a gym in. You know, when you start making money, you can put some things in that allow for you to build. But the personal trainer piece, you know, where he started out by going out to the Bay Area to start working on some of that person, you know, his fitness and in ways that allow for him to have strength and recuperate. Not all fighters have access to that sometimes until they have money or they're in a gym where those resources exist. You know, not everybody has those kind of things that might exist in Mayweather's camp or in some of these other camps where that's built in as part of their resources because these cats are making money. And so, you know, even in the loss that he had, the purse allowed him and allowed him some other things to get positioned in ways that allowed him to have a camp that was a little bit different, and adding in a personal trainer and adding in some of these other things that would allow for him to sustain at the level. Like you said, usually people fall on hurt, like they start to decline at the rounds and he starts to get stronger. J-Rock wasn't giving up at all. Like his strength, and a lot of that goes back to the power of having that personal trainer and training and having the strength and training for being able to be stronger in those late rounds to then elevate the skills that he already had and kind of keep that sustaining through those late rounds or championship rounds. So, you know, I think your analysis was right on, and I was just so impressed with him, you know. And now, you know, y'all on Twitter and everything because, you know, he's the boss, right? He's a traffic cop now.
Yep.
He's the one, you got to come to him now. And, you know, the other part about it is cats like J-Rock always got to chase. You know what I'm saying? So there's a lot of energy when you're trying to chase and get into opportunities. You get to go operate a little bit different when you don't have to chase, and allows for you to kind of set the table in ways, you know, where you got to go to, you know, Herd's backyard to fight. You got to go to everybody's backyard. You got to give up a lot of terms. And I think, like his idol, Bernard Hopkins, once Bernard got control, Bernard started to dictate how it was going to happen. And then that made him even stronger, and he was able to position himself to be able to always be in the best he could be in every fight. I think he has the opportunity to kind of do the same. I'm excited about where that division is going to go, but you had great analysis on that, man.
Yeah, but one thing I wanted to say was to look at a lot of the fights where Jared Hurd struggled in the past,
yeah.
Because guys are boxing from the outside. Tony was boxing on the outside. Austin Trout was outboxing on the outside. Arizona
yep.
Laura was outboxing on the outside and exchanging. But when you're moving around like that, that can also burn energy and wear
right.
you out. So I think that was a very smart idea for them to just go to the inside. He was catching a lot of shots, finding the openings, which there are a lot of openings in Jared Hurd's game. But I think it was an excellent game plan by the coach. I keep forgetting his name. J-Rock's coach. But one thing I wanted to say was, I know you're not going to like this, but this should be a warning to all these people trying to marinate fights. I hate, and you know, this is a common thing I've been saying, but I hate this phenomenon of we're going to wait until these fighters have passed their time, and we're going to wait years and years to see a fight that we all want to see. And, tomorrow's not promised. Nothing's not promised, especially not in a sport like boxing. Anybody could get got at any moment. Anybody can lose. There's fighters that are favored in fights, but we've seen upsets happen. We never know. Sean Porter might end up having the perfect game plan to beat Errol Spence. We never know. Terrence Crawford might fight somebody that will beat him, and then the big fight is gone. So, we need to get fights when they're hot. We need to fight when the fight is big and where the buzz is big, because Jared Hurd and Charlo was a big fight that we were looking for last year. It was going to be one of the biggest fights in boxing, but now both of them have losses. Both of them don't have championships, so it's going to be a long road back to even get to that fight, and even if they get to that fight, it's not going to be the same.
Yeah, and J-Rock's trainer is Stephen Edwards, and I thought he did a really excellent job in the corner, you know,
Stephen,
talking through
Stephen Bradman.
Huh?
Is that his name? Stephen Bradman? Is that his name? Bradman?
Stephen Edwards.
Or Edwards?
Edwards. He did an excellent job of, like, communicating and having that. So my point to your point is all those fighters, I think, have hit that main highway where those fights can be done. I think a lot of the, developing a plan for getting people to a certain level isn't about fighters like that who I think have arrived. Now it's about finding the best fight. And some of those issues have to do with which side of the street you're on and which group you're with that might delay it. So I think that's the problem with boxing altogether, is that the current confederation system does not allow for fights to get made in ways very easily like you can do with MMA. And so these timely fights like this, where people are really entering their prime, those fights need to be made. It's about, you know, if you've only been fighting a couple of years, yeah, you're knocking people out, but to get in with a Charlo or Jared Hurd, you better be ready, youngin. And if you're not ready, those are the ones you talk about, you know, do you need another year to get ready to be at that level? Because it's about sustaining at that level. The other thing, it's about self-scouting. Now, that's not a Charlo issue. I think that fight is an interesting, different kind of fight. But Jared Hurd's problem is part of boxing and being a great boxer. I think Floyd Mayweather is probably was the best of this, is self-scouting, adjusting to things that are weaknesses and making them strengths. And you also have to be able to do that. And I don't think Hurd did any kind of self-scouting. Like, everything you said was evident in all those other fights, which means where was the correction, right, in between those fights? Where you knew, okay, we need to not swing as wide. We need to start having much more sharper, you know, punches going straight down the pipe. That's gonna even add to our power. We need to maybe go to the body a little bit more. We need to, like, that self scouting in Hurd's camp. I don't.
Oh, he was going to the body. Jared Hurd's problem is he just don't have no defense, and you're not going to turn into the Pernell Whitaker in those one kick.
Yeah,
that's something you got to work on.
By this point, you should. And because great boxers, back to what I'm saying, is it's not just defense. He don't have head movement, right? And head movement is not just defensively. Head movement sets up angles offensively, right? And so, like, that's something you should be working on in your camp. And it's also about – the sharpness and the angles of his punches. He goes to body, but think about the angles of his punches. They're more looping. They're not sharp, but he's so much stronger than people, right? He still has the power on him, right? But they ain't technically sound punching.
Yeah.
Right?
But you know what's crazy, though? If you look back at Jared Hurd's older fights, like I watched him fight Molina, and I watched him fight on Showbox as well, he used to move his head. He used to slip out of the Philly cell, and he just doesn't do it anymore. He just tries to walk through people because he believes he can, and it's just not. And he ran into somebody where it just didn't work again. It didn't work again.
So he has to get back to the way he used to fight. Are you thinking he's not listening, or you think the whole camp just got caught up in that "I'm gonna walk you down like I'm Mr. T" type move? You think he's the black Margarito? Man, so I want to continue your theme, though. He's got a loss, so we can't just count him out, right? But part of coming back, which J-Rock did, was you got to self-scout and correct, right? So you said, okay, he's got to have head movement. He's got to work on his defense, right? Because that's the crazy thing about, and I think this is what Deontay Wilder, as we start to get into, conversation about Deontay, is what people fail to realize, some of these guys who got great power, the more technical you are, the more you start to think a little bit like Floyd. And this is what I think Manuel Stewart was great at convincing these guys that. The more you start to get the more, like, you set up the power shots, the more you can be just methodical and kind of just crush people when you start to have some of these pieces put together. And so Jared Hurd has the foundation, has the heart, but he's going, you know, some of the technical things you said are some of the things he's going to have to bring back as he tries to work himself, you know, back into, to contention in the same way that, Charles trying to get himself back on the scene. So, you know, we don't want to count him out just like, you know, we didn't want to count J-Rock out, but obviously he's going to have to make some adjustments that J-Rock did. J-Rock did some self-scouting and corrected those things and came back and took advantage of his opportunity.
With 154, there's no fighters that don't have any losses. All of them got losses.
Yeah, And so, and there's a lot of great fighters. I mean, we all get caught up with the Floyd thing. There's some of our best fighters of all time, from Ali, everybody got lost for something. You know, it still don't keep you from being great. So, you know, it's nice to be undefeated, but people could argue being undefeated might have been you avoided and you kind of stopped for timing and, you know, you didn't fight people when they were hot. So, you know, a lot of people could break down even if you're an undefeated fighter. So, yeah, everybody's got losses. You know, it's about how you start stringing together those wins. And I think that's the part that, you know, folks are going to have to put together. But, hey, what we say is, you know, the title of this show is Wilder is serious about his life, about this life. If you have not been paying attention to Deontay Wilder and the things he's been saying, he's talking about he want a body on his record. He can legally do it. The things he wants to do to dominate Brazil in the Barclays Center in Brooklyn tonight. You better get there. You better get your popcorn ready because these are two big guys who going I don't know if they get out of the fifth round. I don't know if they get out of the fourth round. They're going to be shooting with bad intentions tonight. But Deontay is definitely about this life. He's trying to let people know he's serious. He's here to be, as he said, generational. He should be the Bronx Bomber. You know, he got all the sands. He's taking over the press conference. You know, these guys, I don't know how are they in the same hotel in Alabama fighting? How did they even end up in the same hotel? I don't know. They had all
in Alabama?
Yeah. How did they end up in that hotel? What was that about? Why were they in the hotel?
I forgot who fought. It was at a fight a couple years ago. But I think
it might have been a fight down in Alabama? Deontay
was probably
fighting at home down there. Deontay was probably fighting in Alabama, huh?
He might have been, or Brazil was fighting in Alabama.
Oh, Brazil was fighting in Alabama.
I forgot the story.
I think he had one or two fights in Alabama. Maybe he was trying to, you know, troll him or stalk him a little bit. So obviously these guys don't like
each other.
So talk to me about this. You've been watching this. What's going on? Let people who do not know what's going on.
Well, they got bad blood. It was in a hotel. We told the story on the show a few times. They're in a hotel, and I guess Brazil was in Alabama talking stuff about Wilder, and Wilder's brother was there, his younger brother. He fights at cruiserweight. He was there. And I guess what Wilder says is Brazil sucker punched his little brother, and Wilder and the little brother came back and knocked him out. So, and at some point in time, Brazil was trying to sue Wilder. So they've been having a beef for a couple of years now, and they're going to get the chance to fight now with Brazil being the mandatory. And they say boxing is a gentleman's sport, and if you go back to the origin of boxing, before they box, they used to take 10 paces and shoot. So I guess you put the gun down, and you put the gloves on, and this is what this fight is going to be. And Wilder says he's going to kill him. He said he said he wants a body on his record, and he's been getting a lot of backlash. A whole lot of backlash from the media and fans that are saying like, you shouldn't say this. Death is a serious thing. But you don't have to go back too far in boxing to get this kind of rhetoric. We've had Mike Tyson when he fought Razor Ruddock the second time. He said, if I don't kill him, it don't count.
Yeah,
Mike Tyson told Lennox Lewis that he wanted to eat his kid. He was gonna kill him. He said a lot of things. You said you had famously Sugar Ray Robinson. He had a dream. He had a dream a couple days before the fight that he was gonna kill his opponent. So he went to a priest, and the priest was like, "Nah, it was just a dream. You can go on with the fight." And the dream turned into a premonition. I guess Sugar Ray was the charm one. was one of the charm ones, and he ended up killing Jimmy Doyle that night in the ring with a left hook. So these are things that happened before, but it's all in the game, I guess. But I don't think he's gonna. It's not gonna get to that because the ref's gonna be there to protect him. You know, he's not gonna let him take too much. But
I was excited for it. So, overwhelmingly, I mean, most people are picking Wilder. You and I talked about Wilder. But does Virgil Hunter has said a lot. Does Virgil Hunter provide any kind of opportunity for Brazil and providing him with some strategy that could? You know, one thing we do know about Wilder is, you know, we saw in the Fury fight, which Brazil can do, that he struggles with these guys who box him and who move, who get out the way. You know, he's not as patient because he's searching for the knockout. He said he's corrected those things, that we said Herb didn't do, and he's saying those things he tried to adjust and box himself. You know, he's got a great jab, Wilder does. You know, he's got great punching, you know, a set of tools that he punches with. It's whether or not he's going to put them together or he's going to go for the one punch, right hand. But does Virgil Hunter provide Brazil with anything, or if you Virgil Hunter, if you work with Virgil, what are you trying to get Brazil to do? He also has power.
Well, if I'm Virgil Hunter, I try to work on his defense, make sure he moves his head off the center line, make sure he keeps moving, and try to get him on the inside. You're 30 pounds heavier than this guy. You have a distinct size advantage, so I would try to stay on the inside, stay away from the straight punches, because straight punches and Wilder are going to be the most dangerous one. So try to stay on the inside, and you try to break then just click and hold on, make them break, and then go to the inside and try to keep the fight on the inside. Move your head. When you're on the outside, move your head, throw the jab, and just be ready and be alert at all times. But when we see Brazil fight in the past, he had a lot of power. He's a strong guy. But he does not have defense at all. He gets hit a lot. He gets hit more than – seeing Deontay Wilder fight against Tyson Fury and then seeing Deontay Wilder fight against Dominic Brazil is going to be night and day. The kind of punches that Tyson Fury was able to avoid is not going to be the case for Dominic Brazil. So I have this fight ending very soon. If I'll be surprised if the fight gets out of the third round. But that's pretty much what I'm going to say, because he doesn't have good defense, and you go against a guy like Wilder that's really fast, really athletic, got a good jab. So, like, I think it's a very bad matchup for him.
Well, at least Virgil will get a check. All right.
Virgil gets a lot of checks.
He gets a lot of checks. So this is one check. All he can say is, I did the best I can. You know, Virgil, I did the best I can.
Yeah, Virgil and Robert Garcia are two trainers that they take on a lot of projects of fighters that are like, they take on a lot of fighters that can kind of sully their reputation because they're like, oh, this is a great trainer taking on this guy. Maybe he can save him. And it never really happens that way because, Virgil Hunter, he trained Amir Khan to fight Crawford. And even though he's a good trainer, it's not going to end up pretty well. You have Robert Garcia, he was going to train Andrew Morris versus Tank, and so he had like a whole bunch of underdog fighters. So don't let that tell you that he's not a good trainer. He just takes on fighters that don't necessarily have a very good chance to win it. But yeah, Virgil Hunter is still a good trainer.
Well, hey, this is going to be a good one at the Barclays Center, y'all. You know, please take time out to check this fight out. You know, even if you're trying to watch a basketball game, you might be flipping or whatever might be going on, catch this fight. You know, we hope we ain't no catching no bodies on this fight. We hope it's a clean fight, a knockout happens, we get to count, we get to see, you know, people move on so we can get to these other big-time fights. But, you know, if anything you can know, you need to follow myself and Darnell. Hey, Darnell, where can they get you? How can they follow you on Twitter and other things so they can keep connection with you during the fight?
I actually made an RSG on Twitter account. I'll try to get the Twitter handle of that real quick. But
you can get me while he's getting that up. You can get me at RSG D Wills there. You can come get me. I'm there. You can go to our Real Sports Guys Twitter. We're always up there putting scoring. You might find us going back and forth with folks like Dougie Fisher and Teron Briggs and others who are in boxing throughout the fight. We probably won't have many discussions with this fight tonight because it won't last that long either way. But we will be out there going back and forth with folks, putting our scores, scoring each round as we can go, as long as the fight lasts. So did you find that new Twitter handle, Birthday Boy?
Oh, shoot. Where is it? Oh, yeah, RSG Darnell Kirkland. It's simple. I don't know why I didn't. It's at Kirkland Darnell, my name's at.
We're trying to get him on and on for go. But the one thing we do know is he knows his boxing was great content, great having you. Hey, y'all, thank you for being listening to A Boxing Moment with Darnell and Devon. Until next time, we wish you well and enjoy that time watching the battles in the ring. Good night.